Blog Talk Radio.
And it's Ken Kratzer with another edition of Talking Business, sponsored by CBSI Services, headquarters in Harrison, New York, providing the best of benefit services to the consumer and commercial credit card industry. We're very pleased to have a live guest on the phone calling all the way from Hong Kong, and that is Ruth Stevens. Ruth, how are you tonight?
Hey, great. It's actually morning here. I'm up in Adam.
That's right, 12-hour time difference. Now, just for a little bit of introduction, you are an expert in business-to-business marketing, customer acquisition, retention, and a career that started in places like IBM, Ziff Davis, and Time Warner. And you do a lot of teaching, Columbia Business School. And that takes you to Asia on this exciting trip that you're on. Tell us a little bit about the scope of your trip. You're on, I think, your third country.
That's right. I was invited out to Hong Kong to teach in an MBA program at the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology for 2 months. And I had a need to go to Bangkok to attend a conference with the Business Information Industry Association. I'm a member of the board there, and I wanted to attend. And by amazing and wonderful serendipity, their conference was the week before my teaching schedule was to start. So I reached out to my friends at the Institute of Marketing Malaysia, where I've done a couple of seminars in the past, and asked them if they could use me. And they suggested a topic, and I tacked on a trip to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, on the way to Bangkok, and then on the way to Hong Kong. So it's really been a terrific circular route for me. And I'm just starting my first class at the University of Science and Technology tonight. And so I'm madly, you know, reviewing student emails and getting ready for that class today.
Well, we sure appreciate your time today and get a chance to hear from you. You're a good friend to all of us at the Direct Marketing Club of New York, and I know everyone will be interested to hear how your trip is going. Now, tell us, why don't we start with your trip to Malaysia? I understand from your notes that you went to the Institute of Marketing in Malaysia. What was that like?
Well, it's a trade group. I guess you would call it a professional group. Sort of like the Chartered Institute of Accountants. It's that kind of organization which is devoted to training, support, and advancing the marketing industry in Malaysia. And one thing they do a couple of times a year is invite foreign speakers to give seminars. So I've talked there about internet marketing about 10 years ago and B2B marketing about 5 years ago. So they asked me to talk about what they called new era marketing. And I looked over the proposed table of contents, and I considered that to be what's known in the U.S. as modern marketing, meaning combining outbound and inbound techniques with data and putting the customer at the center of your marketing mindset. And so I put together a 8-hour course on that subject. Well, it ended up being about 5.5 hours with breaks, and was astonished that they were able to attract more than 200 people paying about $100 each. I mean, it was really a terrific event. I was so pleased.
Well, that's terrific. Now, let's staying with Malaysia for a moment. What are some of the high-profile or thriving industries there in Malaysia?
Oh, great question. Well, it's known for palm oil production, and whenever you drive anywhere in Malaysia, you can see palm trees, oil palms, which are very squat and wide, but otherwise they look like the palm trees we're familiar with from Florida. And the other thing that they're well known for is as a manufacturing hub. They produce a lot of technology. They have a very skilled workforce, and there are lots of factories all over the place producing consumer and other technology products.
That's great. What topics were they most interested in your lecture there?
Gosh, excuse me. That's hard to say. Because I haven't actually heard that level of feedback from them. I don't know, but I was guided by the organizers to cover such topics as selecting the right customers to acquire. And I also spent a lot of time on content marketing and evaluating results. And I'm hopeful that they took away a lot of great ideas.
Oh, sure. Well, then you your next stop on this extensive trip, very exciting trip, was to Bangkok, Thailand. Now, what was that like? I understand that well, you mentioned you went to the Business Information Conference there. What was Bangkok like?
Oh, it's a beautiful city, and the people have a reputation, a deserved reputation, for being very friendly. And of course, everyone loves Thai food, so it's a delightful place to visit. One interesting angle, though, is that their beloved king had died a year ago, and the year-long mourning period was set to end on October 26th. It's actually today, and the whole city has been in mourning for a year, and we were advised as visitors to wear conservative colors and be respectful of the Thai desire to remember and mourn the passing of their beloved king. And there were mentions of him and little shrines all over the city, in every shopping place, every billboard, every garden. There were videos and posters and little flower-filled shrines. His flower was, its color was yellow, so there were yellow flowers everywhere. And it was very moving, actually, to think of a whole country unifying in their their feelings for that loss. Quite interesting.
Yes.
I'm sorry, it wasn't a seminar, it was a conference. Every 2 years, the Business Information Industry Association conducts a conference, usually in Asia. There was one in Hong Kong 2 years ago, and this one in Bangkok attracted more than 200 attendees. They were sold out, actually. And it was a 2.5-day conference. No, excuse me. The conference itself was a day and a half, but we had board activities for another day. And if you didn't know, Ken, the Business Information Industry Association focuses on credit data, or information around consumer and business transactions. So you could narrowly define it as a trade group of credit bureaus, but it's broadened much more widely in the last 5 to 10 years as additional sources of data about consumer and business transactions have become available thanks to the internet. And some of the fintech alternatives that have arisen. One example that was given at the conference is PayPal, which is not only ensuring that transactions are seamless and easy to do online, but is also extending credit to small businesses the way that banks have done for decades, centuries. And banks are really having to react to these alternate real competitors, because the companies like banks, in order to understand whether a small business is creditworthy, goes out and buys data about that business's credit history from the credit bureaus. And if PayPal, because it sees a lot of transactions through its system from small businesses, already has a good idea about whether these businesses are paying their bill on time and in full,
right,
undercutting the value chain that has been established over centuries between financial institutions and business buying. So there was a lot to talk about at the conference. But I'll tell you, one of the more exciting topics was cyber crime and fraud. And I learned for the first time that, I mean, we all know that, you know, there's a lot of cyber crime in the world today, but I learned for the first time that it's in many cases organized crime. It's not just a you know, Ukrainian teenager in his bedroom. It's cartels and rings that are very creative and professional in developing ways to steal our money. So it was quite eye-opening and quite thrilling as well.
Interesting. Certainly a challenge, cyber crime and its various implications to the world society. Tell us a little bit about Ruth. Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ruth Stevens, a noted New York-based marketing consultant. And Ruth, tell us a little bit about what are the trends you see in the payment space at the conference that you went to in Bangkok and credit cards. Are there any new trends is a trend that there is more movement towards cell phone and smartphone payments?
Definitely. That's one of the big trends. Another is so-called blockchain that you may be familiar with. And another is fintech, or the development of new technologies to advance financial services and financial transactions. And these three were the talk of the conference, frankly. There was a wonderful story told to us by Melanie Zimmerman, who's a senior vice president at TransUnion. TransUnion is a pretty well-established credit bureau that has managed to reinvent itself considerably in the last several years. And one of the stories that Melanie told us was about how India has leapfrogged the credit infrastructure that has built up in more developed countries over decades by using mobile technology. Because even, well, maybe not the poorest people, but almost all Indians have a mobile phone. So this TransUnion example was how they helped the Indian government set up tools for small businesses, and I mean really small businesses, like hawker stands or fruit sellers on the street, who would never be able to qualify to get a business loan to grow. But through these mobile systems and by accepting mobile payments through their phones, they can then establish a pattern of reliability and trustworthiness that allows the lender to feel comfortable giving them a small loan. And, you know, these are very small businesses, looking for very small amounts of money. But she told us that there were, thanks to this initiative of, you know, people fanning out across India to persuade very small businesses to adopt these programs, that they were able to get 95% of the population set up on these tools. And the kicker was that, one, you get a bank account through your phone, and two, you get access to life insurance at a very affordable rate. So there were some, you know, motivational offers in there to encourage people. And the outcome or the benefit has been an extraordinary collection of new channels for reaching businesses and consumers through their mobile phones. Great story, heartwarming story.
Wow, that is great to hear. I talked with Ruth Stevens, who is calling us tonight on Talking Business, calling live from Hong Kong, which is the third stop on her Asian trip. And Ruth, just if you would, you mentioned the three topics of the conference that you attended in Bangkok, being cybercrime and fraud, fintech, and blockchain. Maybe you could just mention, what did they say about blockchain at the conference in Bangkok?
They did a quick raise your hand survey of the attendees, asking how many people in the room — these are pretty traditional companies in the room — how many are investigating the opportunity with blockchain, and more than 50% of the attendees raised their hand. So it's clearly of great interest. And the potential there is that blockchain can offer a more stable — well, maybe not more stable, but a faster and lower cost route to conducting business transactions. And while it, one, threatens to disintermediate the credit bureaus and the banks, on the other hand, anything that makes what they offer faster, cheaper, and better is something that needs to be explored and find ways to adopt it. So there's a lot of activity in this area. A little bit of fear and trepidation, but potential as well.
Okay. Ruth Stevens on the line from Hong Kong tonight. We have a little bit of little background noise. Ruth, are you with us still?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great.
Can you hear me?
Anything else about Bangkok, Thailand that really stood out on your visit there?
Yes, they've done an amazing job of installing some public transportation routes in Bangkok over the last 10 years that haven't made the notorious Bangkok traffic go away as an issue, but have managed to displace some of it with a network of skyways, which are basically elevated monorails, and some new subways and airport link trains. So it's pretty exciting, the investments that Bangkok has made to enable people to get around.
Oh, that's terrific. Then you made your way on to Hong Kong, which is certainly a developed city with a little bit more of a Western atmosphere to it. What was your arrival in Hong Kong like, and your impressions?
Thank you. Well, I had come out here to teach last year, also at the University of Science and Technology. I was here for 3 months, And that was at the introduction of Jean Raitt, who I'm sure many of your listeners know and love. Jean has been living in Hong Kong for quite a while now, but he is a past board member of the Direct Marketing Club of New York and was very active in the club and is remembered very fondly. He's been teaching marketing at the University of Science and Technology for 6 or 7 years and was kind enough to introduce me in there, and I was hired thanks to him. And he also welcomed me to Hong Kong and showed me some of the fun things to do here. So when I arrived on Saturday, just a few days ago, I really hit the ground running because I had had 3 months here. And frankly, Ken, I felt like I never left. I really love it here and find it really similar to New York in its drive, its energy, convenience, its activities, and of course the food. So I've had a great time. I'm teaching 2 courses here to MBAs. One is called Customer Acquisition and Retention. That's the class that kicks off tonight. And I would characterize that course as being really about database marketing. So tonight we're going to cover how to calculate the lifetime value of a customer. And next Thursday night, we'll look at data and data sources and data uses. So it's the kind of material that I know your listeners are familiar with. Then on Saturday morning, I'm teaching a course called B2B Marketing. And that, again, these are 8-week courses. So it's pretty compressed, but I'll be covering the nature of B2B buying and selling, have a lot of case studies, and we'll also look at sales enablement, distribution, channel strategies, and product management. And the really fun thing in that course is I've invited the head of the China region for Dolby. You know, of course, Dolby, the sound engineering company.
Sure.
They have a really excellent and competitive in-theater surround sound business that many of us are familiar with. And they're trying to launch that into China now. Huge market. The Chinese appetite for movies is boundless. And Alex Orr, who's in charge of getting Dolby installed in Chinese theaters, is coming to the class next week to present his problem to the class members, and they're going to break up into groups and develop strategic marketing plans for Alex to try to ramp up his penetration of the Chinese market. And he explained the problem to me as being that he needs to not only get the theater owners to adopt the technology, but he also has to persuade the movie producers. And these are the producers like the Money Men, but also the directors and everybody else involved in making movies, because the movie has to be shot with Dolby technology in order to be shown using Dolby technology. So it'll be a really complex and exciting marketing challenge that the students will be wrestling with over the next 8 weeks.
That's terrific. The courses that you'll be teaching there in Hong Kong over the next couple of weeks. Maybe Ruth, we're talking with Ruth Stevens, New York-based direct marketing, data marketing expert. Where do the students at the school you're teaching at come from, and what are some of the backgrounds that they have?
Thanks. Yeah, I've been reviewing the rosters, and some of them are part-time MBA students, meaning they're basically going at night and on weekends, and others are full-time. They're going to classes during the day, but their average work experience is 5.5 years, so they're probably in their late 20s on average. They come from most of them are from Hong Kong or China, and there's about 20% that are from foreign countries. I've seen all kinds of countries represented here all over Europe and Asia. I've got a bunch of students from Thailand, from Taiwan, from Australia. Really looking forward to getting to know these guys. And most of them are working at companies that we've all heard of, lots in financial services and shipping, transportation, the kinds of industries that you would expect. Some of them in food and beverage, some of them in luxury goods, and the kinds of economic activity you see in Hong Kong are represented in the student body.
That's interesting to hear. Okay, boy, you're quite a different group of students, and I'm sure you learn a lot from them, what they'll be talking about in class. When you mentioned that many are involved with financial services, what kind of areas of financial services are they working in, consumer, or is it more in commercial banking?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure yet. I have to get to know these guys a little bit better. But it's a pretty broad swath, I think, just looking at the roster from my class tonight. For example, we've got J.P. Morgan here. a lot of companies that we're all very familiar with, PricewaterhouseCoopers, aging digital cloud company. Wow, what is that? Toys R Us, Bell Canada, ING Bank. That'll be interesting. I actually have a case from ING Bank. I'm sure she'll find that interesting. Some consulting companies and... here's a tax analyst from Deloitte, Boston Consulting Group guy. Lots of really nice businesses here. PwC Consulting. Some telecom people, it looks like. Standard Chartered Bank. That's a huge Hong Kong bank. Recruiting company.
Sure.
Zurich Insurance. Yeah, they're very active here. Oxfam, that's interesting. So a charitable organization.
Yeah. And
remember, Hong Kong is a former British colony. So.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, talking with Ruth Stevens tonight in Hong Kong, what is the interaction now between the mainland of China and Hong Kong today? What is the interaction and how does it affect business, would you say?
It's the talk of the town. It's the single most disturbing and challenging issue in Hong Kong life. We're 20 years in since the takeover or the British handover to China, mainland China, to take control of Hong Kong. And there was a 50-year grace period during which Hong Kong was guaranteed a considerable amount of freedom, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, is some people believe is being slowly eroded by the mainland, who are supposed to be hands-off for another 30 years, but they've already taken some actions that concern Hong Kongers with good reason. And there's a malaise here that's palpable of worry. On the political side, there's a legislative council that is supposed to be the legislative body here for that 50 years I mentioned. And it's had a tough time, because there are parties that are really trying to toe the mainland line, and there are others that want to protest it and oppose it. So there's a bit of, you might call it stagnation or paralysis in moving forward as a region or a city-state. A lot of confusion. That said, though, it's still an incredibly dynamic and exciting place to live. It still has the colonial legacy that makes it very international and very tolerant of diversity. And speaking of diversity, I went to an event last Saturday that was a picnic outside, attracting, there must have been, I don't know, I'll say about 1,000 people there, celebrating.
That's a big picnic.
Celebrating LGBT members of the Hong Kong community. And the event was sponsored by large companies like Telstra, the Australian telecom company, JP Morgan, and other financial
sure.
firms that are obviously demonstrating that they support and welcome LGBT employees and customers. It was really heartening. It's a really
absolutely.
Exciting place.
Oh, that's great to hear. I guess one of the questions I have on, certainly when you think of the European Union today, was there concerns about the big American internet companies and smartphone companies, Apple, Google, YouTube, Facebook, and perhaps Twitter? Are you noticing the same usage of those American big brands in the internet space in Asia, the cities that you visited?
Yes, they're very powerful here. I actually asked the Malaysian audience if anybody in the room didn't have a Facebook account, and no one raised a hand. So Facebook is huge here. And at the same time, though, LinkedIn has not really taken off in Asia for some reason. There are Asian-specific social networks that are much more popular, not so much on the business side, but on consumer. There's a really wonderful Asian social network called Line that is fun to use and very popular. And of course, out of China, amazing social media and payment apps have been developed. One is called WeChat. There's also a Chinese version of Twitter. It's all conducted in Chinese. You know, in mainland China, Facebook is forbidden. So many people have Facebook accounts, but they access them through virtual private networks. And the Chinese government has stated that they're planning to shut down those VPNs at some point. So that's a political problem that Mark Zuckerberg has been trying to address for some years now. But long story short, I don't get any kind of anti-American or anti-American monopoly here. China is investing hugely in technology, in consumer technology. And of course, the Apple manufacturing hubs are often managed by Taiwanese, but the factories are operating in China. So, you know, the world is flat, certainly.
Well, interesting that the Taiwanese would supervise an Apple manufacturing facility in China. That's an interesting perspective. I go back to Tom Friedman's book about the sign of a growth in a country was that you were part of the Dell computer supply chain. And so many countries in Asia were part of that. I just wanted to ask you, how are Google and YouTube received in Asia?
Well, again, the Chinese are not happy with either of them. YouTube is also forbidden in China.
Wow.
But everywhere else in Asia, Google is huge. Interestingly, Yahoo has a life here that, as it has declined in North America, Yahoo has managed to hang on and be quite dominant in Asia, especially in Japan. It's partly owned by the Japanese company SoftBank, who, you know, the owner of SoftBank, Masayoshi Son, has great aspirations. He's an admirer of Steve Jobs and sort of has plans to grow his company. But the outside of the Chinese political angle, I don't detect any antipathy toward American dominance or American capabilities in either hardware or software.
Certainly. Well, Ruth Stevens, we appreciate your time tonight calling in all the way from Hong Kong. Is there any other aspect of your trip so far that has taken you to Malaysia, Thailand, and now Hong Kong? Any other major impressions you want to mention?
Well, there's every day is filled with amazing experiences. But I did want to mention that I've been invited to give a lecture in Hanoi in a couple of weeks. I'm really excited about this. I'm of course of the age that remembers when Vietnam was supposedly our enemy, and I'm just thrilled at the opportunity not only to visit but to give back a little bit. So that's very exciting. I'm also going to Japan later in November to give a couple of seminars. So it's been a whirlwind so far and just a great joy. Can't wait to get back to New York on December 18th. And I'm really sorry I'm going to miss the Silver Apples Gala on November 16th. I know it's the absolute rave for direct marketers in New York. And I know, I'm sure, Ken, you'll be covering it with your video interviews.
There, yeah, absolutely. We'll have it online just so you can watch from wherever you are in Asia at that point. I'll pass your best regards to Paulette Oliva, the president of the Direct Marketing Club of New York.
Thank you.
So, Ruth, thank you so much. Maybe we can catch up in a couple of weeks and hear more about how your trip is going and how your classes are going. But enjoy your trip, stay well, and best wishes from all your friends here in New York, especially the Direct Marketing Club of New York and everyone in the direct marketing community.
It's been a pleasure, Ken. Thanks so much.
Okay, well, you have a good day and enjoy teaching your class tonight. We'll catch up again very soon. That is Ruth Stevens.
Thanks, Lois.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Ruth. That's Ruth Stevens, a direct marketing consultant, expert in business-to-business marketing, acquisition, long career in the field, with, starting out at IBM, Ziff Davis, and Time Warner, and now teaches at Columbia Business School and other schools in the area, but now is teaching in Hong Kong, as she just described. And so we are excited about her opportunity, and we'll look forward to hearing more. I'll hopefully catch up with Ruth again in a few weeks and learn more about how her trip and her teaching is going. So, again, this is Ken Kratzer for Talking Business. We're sponsored by CBSI Services, based in Harrison, New York, for over 40 years, providing insurance-based products and benefits to consumers, to groups, and also to the consumer credit card field. If you anything in that area, you have a question or something we could help you on, we do a lot of customer service management, contact center management, especially in the consumer banking field. Just give us a call at 914-630-3457 or look us up on the internet at CBSIServices.com. So, from the headquarters of CBSI Services in Harrison, New York, this is Ken Kratzer on Talking Business. Have a good evening, and thank you for listening.